Oh no! Eric was debating with Snow on the merits of humour on the GB Missing Episodes thread, an argument they inexplicably chose to have at the top of a very large radio telescope, and it looks like he's been pushed over the edge!
In the Latin alphabet, Jehovah begins with an I.
He fell just outside the off stump.
Hey, Eric, calm down.
It's the end, but the moment has been prepared for.
The Watcher! So Richard was Eric's successor all along. I wonder why he was so quiet for the last four episodes.
Yep. Welcome everybody to episode 6 of the Grumpcast. We're calling it Blue is the Colour. So, unfortunately, Tim has disappeared off the scene and left us in the lurch. So, are we downcast, Mike?
Oh, look, we've got him tied up at the back there, so, you know, so that we can take over. It's a coup. So, Tim's busy on other things, so good luck to Tim. And, it's just down to a two-hander now.
The good news is that, because Tim's asked me to take over, it means the Grumpcast is perfectly aligned with Doctor Who, because now we're both fronted by somebody from Yorkshire.
True.
Which proves, of course, that lots of podcasts have a north. And, of course, while Mike is from about as far south as you might reasonably want to go, if you are listening to this and you're Caledonian, then you should probably know that both Mike and I have Scottish heritage on our mother's side as well. So even though we're an Englishman and Aussie, between us you've got a full Scot on the podcast.
Yes, yes, that's true. Most definitely. So this might be our last regular one for the year, wouldn't it, Richard?
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to talk a bit more about, further on in the podcast, we'll talk about what we plan to do later in the year. But yes, this is probably the last regular one. And I guess we should probably also say that Tim used to spend about 3.5 weeks on each podcast cleaning it up and, you know, all the making it sound absolutely lovely. Maybe a little rougher and readier now that we're in charge, but we'll try and make it just as fun and full of interesting content.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
And I guess before we get too much further, Mike, perhaps you'd like to tell us what's on the show today.
Well, okay, we're going to talk about the new Who trailers for the new series with Jodie Whittaker, the ones that were broadcast during the World Cup final and at the San Diego Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Phil Morris's tweet about time to return Doctor Who. We're going to talk about the animations, which there's some discussion about recently. And our main discussion will be, hence why this is called Blue is the Colour, is about the Series 12 Blu-ray box set that was released recently.
Which has been, I guess, you know, a real source of interest.
Yes.
And lovingly produced. So yeah, we'll have fun talking about that.
Yes.
But before we get to that, first up, we've got an email from our old friend Keith.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's in the format of a series of clues. So I might ask you, Mike, to see if you can decode them.
Okay.
So anyway, here it goes. So Keith says, "Dear Three Who Grump," or I suppose these days two, "I have been working on some unlicensed tie-in fiction for our favourite TV show. I wonder if you'd give an opinion on these storylines. Number one, on a far-flung human colony, workers are hypnotised with songs such as Pipes of Peace and Band on the Run into producing vegetarian burgers to feed the monster that's secretly controlling them. I've called this little number. What do you think he's going to call that?
It sounds like it's set in a cabin as well. So I'm going to say it's the Maca Terror.
The Maca Terror. Yes, that is in fact his title. Well done, Mike. Number two. One of our heroes is trapped in the Wi-Fi, dies, and is canonized. His mates come to the rescue of his ghost when they hear him ringing all the local telephones to the rhythm, Oh Yoko.
Okay.
So what do you think he's calling that one?
I reckon he's going to call this one the Bells of St. John.
Yes, John Lennon. Yeah.
I see how this is going.
Yeah. Number three, one of our heroes arrives on Pluto, which is made habitable by artificial suns. The suns are run by the much, much hated taxman. Our hero, George, spent much of his time in hiding, and when on the verge of getting caught again, he would sing out this episode's title. What do you think that might be?
Something about sun makers, I think. Here come the sun makers.
Yeah, I think that must be it.
Mm.
Definitely sounds like a George Harrison one. And finally, number four. The second best drummer in the universe is called to a far-off world, where his percussion skills are required to keep the rhythm of a ceremonial song, which is sung to keep an angry god asleep.
Okay.
So successful is he in this that they rename him. And I think, Mike, this is one of your favourite episodes of Doctor Who. This is named after.
I love this episode, and I'm sure the drumming's better than the singing. So how about Ringo of Akatan?
Yeah, you're spot on the money again, Mike. So that's fantastic. So anyway, Keith says, you may by this point think I'm obsessed, but I'm sure you and your listeners will show me some Mersey.
Oh, God.
All the best, kiddos. Keith.
thank you very much, Keith. Yes, you are obsessed.
Yeah, but definitely keeping the line on Scousers, another entertaining as ever contribution to the podcast.
Thank you, Keith.
Indeed. So, the New Who trailers. First of which was the one that appeared at halftime during the World Cup final. So, thoughts on that one, Mike?
Well, there's not a lot to think about because there wasn't a lot to see. look, I always said teaser trailers actually tease something.
Mm.
We saw a little bit of Jodie and a little bit of stuff and no dialogue at all, I think. And that was about it, really. It was a bit like, okay, so, right, that tells me absolutely nothing. I'm not sure what you thought, Richard.
Yeah, I was a bit frustrated by it because it seemed to me, you know, one can't generalise, but this, the World Cup final, you've got to think that probably 60% of the audience is male and probably lots of young boys watching. And so if you were the sort of person who's been watching Doctor Who and you've liked it, maybe you're starting to grow out of it, and then you're a bit concerned about the fact that Doctor Who's turning into a woman, then what I'd have thought you'd want to do is to say to them, well, look, yeah, okay, it's new and it's different, but it's the same show that you've always loved, so please tune in. Instead of which, it kind of looks like an episode of EastEnders, which I find hard to believe that that's the sort of thing that's going to interest that particular demographic.
So, yeah, I think that was pretty disappointing, I thought.
Yeah, and I thought it was beautiful. You know,
it looks good.
There was lots of lovely camera work, and you can't complain about that. But it, as you say, it just didn't engage in any way. It didn't speak about an adventure story. So,
well, this is more like, you know, like being magical type thing. It's like suddenly the Doctor can do magic, and it's like Harry Potter.
Mm.
So I'm surprised you didn't have a wand waving it. You know. They should get Bradley Walsh his copy of the Beano, so rather than whatever it was that he was reading. It's just kind of, and she can conjure up sausages and stuff.
Yeah.
And some weird green pizzas, which I don't know what that was all about. Was that supposed to be?
She wasn't exactly encouraging healthy eating, was she? But then,
no.
I guess we all like a little bit of something that tickles our fancy every now and then.
Yeah, well, there's nothing wrong with a full English breakfast occasionally.
No, indeed. Yeah.
Mm,
but
yes.
Fortunately, we didn't have to wait too much longer to get another go at it with the trailer from San Diego Comic-Con. So, Mike, what did you make of that one?
Well, there's a little bit more there that we saw a little bit more about what was going on. And again, it looked really, really good, like quality sort of camera work and stuff. But again, it didn't really tell you much. So you don't really get much of an idea about what's happening. They're sort of wandering. Looks like they're wandering on a beach or something at one stage. Mm-hmm. Certainly looks much better than the old days when they were wandering around on an enemy of the world. But it looked very nice. But again, it's like, well, what's actually happening in this show? Like the old trailers were always, they'd trail something and you'd see some kind of drama action.
With that Eccleston one, we actually got, you know, fire, didn't we? Bursting out from behind them. It looked quite dramatic.
Yeah, but this was very disappointing. But look, you found out more from that clip, to be honest, because that actually gave you an idea about what the action was like. So there's a little bit of fizzy dialogue going on there when she's on the train. So that really did say more about the show to me than either of the two trailers. So even though you didn't really see a lot there.
I've been rather remiss, Mike, because I don't think I've actually seen the leaked clip.
Oh, okay. It's just her on a train, sort of, and it's very sort of, you know, that rapid interaction, a bit like a Moffat type thing. But
right,
it does show you a little bit about what the type of thing that the Doctor is behaviours like. Neither of the trailers do. Yeah, and of course, there's no returning monsters in it, so you don't get an impression that, you know, the Daleks are going to turn up or, you know, the Cybermen, like the trailer for last year, where at the end you see the Cybermen, the Mondasian Cybermen, which you start getting excited about. There's nothing like that.
Although, you know, again, I'm harking back to Eccleston now, but there was a trailer halfway through his season where the monsters from Paul Cornell's episode, those kind of big flappy of creatures, they looked actually quite impressive.
Yeah,
I thought in the little clip that in the trailer there. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm not too bothered about whether it's Daleks and Cybermen. I can get over that.
Yeah, me
too. It would be nice to see something just to see a threat. But I mean, I'd say I was probably less down on this one than you've been. I didn't think it was great, but I thought at least it was had a bit more going for it, and some drama in it, some sense of peril and people running and so on.
Yeah.
And then, also San Diego Comic Con, we've got the panel.
Oh, the panel,
which
yes.
eventually ended up on the on YouTube, so we got the full hour-ish of it. So what do you think of that?
Well, I thought that, first thing, the two companions in the first one looked like poor old rabbits in the headlights. So to wonder what the hell they were doing there. Look, Jodie Whittaker came across very well. She talked an awful lot and sounded extremely enthusiastic. And I thought that she basically carried the whole thing. She and Chris Chibnall also spoke very enthusiastically about the whole series. And between them, I think that they gave the impression that it was worth having a look at anyway. Yeah, but Jodie was very enthusiastic and she talked a lot and she was, I thought it was really, she did a really good job, I thought. I don't like the, and some of the questions are really naff, as they usually are. And it's like, you can't avoid that, but the two companions are a bit like, well, do I have to answer a question now? But yeah, I think that she made it, and I think she and good old Chibbers, they really sort of were very enthusiastic about the new series, and they gave me the impression that their enthusiasm made me think that, oh, well, it's worth watching, at least for the first episode, at least, and see what it's, at least to give it a go.
Yes, and inevitably these things are highly promotional. I mean, they're there to get everyone excited about the new series. So it's no great surprise that they're all loving each other and everything's wonderful and so on. But I mean, I guess from the other side of things, it's nice to have the feeling that no one's going to be erased from Doctor Who anytime soon. You know, they all seem to be getting on quite well at the moment.
Yeah,
Which is great to see. from my point of view as well, I hadn't realised that Mandeep Gill is also from Yorkshire. So we have kind of, you know, Yorkshire squared, peak Yorkshire, as I described it. So, you know, there's something.
Mm.
I tried to make a feature of the fact that we had that, and then the International Yorkshire Day on the 1st of August, almost immediately afterwards. But it seemed like I was a bit of a lone voice in the wilderness on that one.
International Yorkshire Day.
It was something like that. Yeah, the 1st of August, it's celebrated, you know, inside the boundaries of Yorkshire and nowhere else, I think. But it's the sort of place where everyone likes to make a big fuss about it, you know, and it means a big deal if you come from it, and it means nothing if you don't.
Yeah, well, I know it was International Cat Day the other day. So it's International Something Day. Well, International
Every
Yorkshire
day,
day,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Every day is somebody's day, isn't it?
Yeah, it's rather, some of them are rather amusing, but yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And, I mean, any thoughts on what Chris Chibnall had to say in the interview?
Well, he sort of emphasised the fact that it was going to be slightly more family-orientated, and I think that some of the stuff that has been coming out about the show sort of does indicate that it's more family orientated, and there's a little bit of educational mm-hmm. thing going back to its roots, from what I can see about the historical stories.
Right.
The one that does interest me is the Witch Hunts one.
Right.
It sounds interesting, and it is something that I'm aware of historically, and yeah, and they got Alan Cumming in that one, so you know he's always worth watching. So, look, I like the fact that I'd be able to sit down with the two girls and we'd watch it all together. They're certainly looking forward to that. They're a bit. They didn't like the Christmas special. I tell you that.
Right.
So, and I
it
think
was
that
a bit dull, wasn't it?
Well, they sort of said, "Well, what was happening there?" So they're generally enthusiastic about watching the show again, which for me is good. Because I can get them to watch that and then go backwards to all the good stuff. So yeah, I think.
I mean, if it isn't appealing to them, who is it appealing to? I guess is you know.
Well, exactly.
You know, looking at Chris Chibnall, I mean, the thing that struck me the most about it was how like Moffat. I mean, not. I don't say he's got a physical resemblance, but you know, he's another middle-aged bloke. You know, so we've had Russell T. Davies, we've had Stephen Moffat, and now we've got Chris Chibnall, all of a similar kind of age, all growing up in fandom together about the same time.
Yeah,
you know, middle-aged, perhaps middle-class. But certainly white and male, and it, you know, for all that everyone's talking about diversity and so on, actually, when the creative heart of the series is unchanging like that, you wonder actually how much of a difference is it going to make. If there genuinely is a liberal feminist agenda on Doctor Who, then how come Moffat was so bad at it? I mean, you know, you get the things like the black characters always dying, hardly any female writers, hardly any female directors. So you've never really seen any true diversity yet. And I wonder, you know, with Chibnall at the heart of it, how much of a difference there's really going to be.
Yeah, look, I don't know. It's like it's a female lead character, so it's going to be different. It's not going to be the same as what it was. Whether it's actually going to be good different or not very good different, remains to be seen.
Indeed. Okay. Well, I've got another email here that's come in that I was going to read out, and this one's from Trevor, who I think we've had an email from before.
Yeah.
So Trevor says, "Dear Grumpcast, I can't tell you how excited I am to see Chris Chibnall's version of Doctor Who, particularly given his contributions to Torchwood."
Okay.
He says, "I'm hoping for the same indefatigable pursuit of feminism in his new series as he demonstrated in the seminal Cyberwoman. I'm expecting the sensitivity and lightness of touch that he displayed in Countryside, which is the sort of thing that won't put anyone off their dinner. I'm sure that a family audience will thrill to the monster from day one. No child or parent need feel any embarrassment in each other's company with something as wholesome as an alien sex gas. I'm anticipating the understanding of diversity and empathy towards the other that the Torchwood team showed as they shot the alien blowfish in the head in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. And after Moffat's casual attitude towards killing off beloved characters, it will be refreshing to have the same sanctity, that Chibnall showed towards the lives of Owen and Tosh in Exit Wounds. All the best, Trevor.
Yes, thank you, Trevor. Torchwood, well, yes. His contributions to Torchwood were memorable, but probably not in a great way. We remember them.
Yeah. I mean, perhaps it's unfair to bring it up because it was its own thing, but...
it's a different show.
It is the largest body of his work in the Doctor Who universe, isn't it?
Yes, yes. He has done other things of much more greater note since, so he's probably matured as a writer, one would think. But
indeed.
You can bring up his Doctor Who contributions. It's not been
terribly
fantastic either. But, yeah, who knows? When you're working within the constraints of someone else's vision compared to your vision, who knows what it's going to be like. He was the script editor, wasn't he, on Torchwood, as I recall?
Indeed.
There were several good stories there. Not written by him,
Well, I mean, to be honest, I quite liked Countryside. It's just you wouldn't want to be seeing that in a Doctor Who setting, but it was an interesting story.
I don't think it's going to be like that.
Sure.
He certainly emphasised it's going to be for family viewing, but I hope it doesn't dumb it down too much as well. Because it needs to be accessible to adults and children, I think. And Doctor Who's always done that in the early days. But we'll see.
Yeah. So I guess on that note, it's time for us to talk about what's happening next with Grumpcast. So as we trailed the start of the show, the regular series is going to go to bed for a bit. I mean, there's a possibility we might do another one at some point before Christmas, but the main thrust is going to be with the new series. So, I mean, I'm excited about that. I'm keen to see it and to you know, with that in mind, I'm intending to put together a series of podcasts reviewing each episode. So I guess a much more frequent series of podcasts, but also a bit more rough and ready. I mean, we won't be able to put so much effort into each one, and they're going to have to be more of a snapshot. And I've also teed up some additional people to take part in those from the worlds of the Planet Mondas forum, so people that you'll have seen commenting in the forum. So I'm not sure if that's going to be fortnightly or weekly. It'd be nice to do it every week. That might be too much, so we'll have to see how that pans out. So it'll be on the Grumpcast feed. It won't be called the Grumpcast, it'll be called something else, and we'll give you a bit more information nearer the time.
Yeah, and they'll be a lot shorter too, because... So short and sweet.
Indeed.
And more frequent.
Yeah. So that's what's coming from us.
Now, what's next, Richard?
Well, I think we've done that to death, so it's probably time to have our inevitable discussion of Phil Morris. Seems that we can't go through an episode without mentioning him at least once. And this week's offering, or this episode's offering, is his strange tweet round about the time of the first trailer, where he said, "Time to return, Doctor Who."
Yeah, well, it is, Phil. I suspect he's talking about time for the show to return. But
indeed.
But, you know, it also works on another level, saying that, maybe it's time I return, Doctor Who. I'm sure that's not what he means. But
no,
people sort of latched onto that. And, you know, if you think about that, it's like, well, if you're going to tweet and you're going to do these silly tweets, Phil, then yes, Phil, it is time. If you've got missing Doctor Who, it is time for you to bloody well return it. That's my opinion.
Indeed. I mean, it's a shame because it felt like there was a good opportunity between Capaldi's departure at Christmas time.
Yes.
And Jodie not appearing until probably October this year. So 10 months, no Doctor Who. It felt like that was a really good opportunity in the schedules for Morris to return something, if he had anything to return.
Yes.
We talked at length last time about what we thought he had. I don't think it impacts my belief around what he may or may not have, but it's frustrating that he chooses not to use that as an opportunity to bring anything back. Well, so far as we know, I mean, it's only a couple of months now, so most of that time has gone past.
But I wish Phil had stopped these stupid tweets, to be honest.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. I mean, it seemed to me it was a bit like the Venezis thing, you know, with his reflection of the blue. It was a very similar sort of setup where, you know, you feel like he's deliberately written it in a way that's going to pique attention. It's like, look at me.
Of course. Except Paul's one was amusing.
No, indeed. Yeah, yeah.
That's the difference, I think.
He's been at it again today, you know, with his with a picture of Michael Goff as the Celestial Toy Maker.
Oh, has he? He's been doing it. Yeah, okay. I haven't seen that one yet, but because he's got me blocked. But okay. Yeah, typical. Yeah, all right.
Okay, well, I think we can probably move on from that.
Yeah, I think we've seen enough
to something that's possibly a little bit more likely to happen, which is talk about animations.
Yes, well, there's a lot of excitement about this because the Daily Mirror published that story about we were getting an animated version of the Macra Terror and the Wheel in Space with the missing episodes animated. It seems to me that one seems to be more likely than the other, from what I can gather and what I've heard. Macra Terror is interesting because Macra Terror's had a fair bit of publicity in fandom this year so far. There was the missing film can that 42 to Doomsday fellas in their last podcast spoke about, and I was actually involved with Mark and Rob and their interactions with the ABC archives regarding that that film can. Which I can say that the upshot of it was that, according to the ABC archives, they thought that the film can was actually probably the original that contained the episode, because it's missing. The problem there is that Mark from 42 to Doomsday had received some advice from someone who should know about this, that the can itself was probably manufactured in the mid-70s.
Right.
Because also there was the thing that we... was involved when Dr. Scott put up that picture of the from eBay of the empty film can for Mr. Squiggle. That was definitely from the early 70s. It was from 71, according to the ABC. Right. And that had, it's to do with the markings on the film can. And certainly this person, I have no reason to suspect that they were wrong in any way, shape or form. And it seems to me that the can was created around about the mid to late 70s. So therefore, Macra Terror would have been probably destroyed here in Australia in 76. It wasn't sent back, that's one thing, but quite why they would be copying stuff at that time seems odd and a bit strange and a bit unlikely. Also, it's unlikely, you know, for manufacturing sort of hoaxes for Doctor Who fans. That was a little bit later. That's more an 80s thing that started. So, it's just one of those things. It's all up in the air at the moment. So I don't think that Macra Terror has been found. No. So therefore, I think animation is the best bet that we'll ever see it in live action. And it's a 4-episode story, which gives them more time to actually do a... I'm not going to say proper job, but a less rushed job than they did with Power of the Daleks, which does have its good moments, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And even with the human element in Power, some of it's quite good, some of it's awful. And certainly the worst parts are to do with the humans when they're a bit Captain Pugwash-like.
Yeah.
But I think that it really is quite exciting, and this is the only way we'll ever see this in live action, I think. This and there's a few other stories I think we will never see. Like, I could be wrong, but I'm fairly certain that Macra Terror has not been found. So therefore, I'm quite looking forward to it. So roll on November. I guess it would be in November that it'd be released, and we'll be able to add another animation to our growing pile. And I think it's a good thing. I'm not sure how you feel about Macra Terror, because it's quite a good story.
It's not very long ago that I listened to the audio version of it.
Yeah.
I think I bought it through Audible. And, it's an interesting story. A bit offbeat, but, there's a nice mixture of humour and of, you know, the scary elements as well.
Yes.
I don't think that the Macra would have been all that well realised on telly, and the animation gives them a chance to maybe do something a little bit different. I mean, they won't stray too far from it, but it may look a little bit more dramatic when they animate it. I'd like that. I mean, I enjoyed the Power of the Daleks animation. As you say, it was clunky in places, but it seemed to get better as it went on.
Yes.
And so if it were the same team that was involved as that, then I'm sure they've learnt from that experience, and it would, there'd be a good chance that it would be better. And if you followed me on the forums, you'll know that I'm fascinated by one particular scene in the Macra Terror, which is when Polly goes off for a hair wash.
Yes.
And returns with her hair about a quarter the length that it was. I mean, that's some shampoo.
Yes.
It'd be interesting to see what they make of that on the animation.
Yeah, I think I always get the impression, and a lot of this comes from the sensor clips that exist, is that I can see this one as being quite atmospheric. I think there's a lot of mm-hmm. gas floating around, mainly to disguise the fact that the Macra prop's pretty god-awful. But I think that could come across quite well in the animation as well. I don't think, and I'll say this now, I'm not a big fan of the colour versions, and I don't think this would work very well in a colour version. Mm. I think that black and white murky thing really will enhance it and enhance its appeal. Putting it in colour is just going to completely ruin it, in my opinion.
Yeah, it could be a bit time-lashy, maybe, if you coloured it.
And if it's BBC America are putting cash in again, then they'll insist on a colour version. I don't know why they think that Americans will only watch something in colour, but it's rather odd. But anyway.
Well, they can keep it, can't they? And we watched the good one.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we should say about Macra Terror, about Tim and his avatar. He was so convinced about it that he changed his avatar.
Well, we know that he has his sources. So,
yes.
Maybe he's talked to somebody and he's got a more definitive view on it than we have. But yeah, I mean, I think an animation is quite likely.
I think it's very likely.
And Macra Terror seems to be the right era because they could reuse the Ben and Polly figures that they've already got,
and the Doctor.
Let's
hope they improve Ben. So he looks a little bit more like Michael Crowe's.
Like Ben, for instance, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be good. So what do you like? The Wheel in Space is a story, of course, that I have some affinity with. And the rumours about that, there was animation and then it emerged later, that there may be a version with the BritBox reconstructions, which...
Yes.
Which, let's be honest, I'm not overly interested in. I also think that there's more chance that Wheel in Space, bits of it may have been found by Phil Morris as well. So it seems a strange choice.
It's been a persistent rumour, hasn't it, Wheel in Space?
Yeah.
Stuck in Customs was the particularly standout story on that one.
Mm.
And of course, Phil Morris... Pandorica saying, why is no one asking me about Wheel in Space? So, and then when he was pinned down, he said, oh, it's I haven't quite tracked that one down, but I could see that maybe the story in the newspaper, the Express, they conflated two things. So maybe there's a thing happening with the Wheel in Space and there's a thing happening with the Macra Terror. One's an animation and one isn't, but they kind of got that mixed up. I certainly can't see two animations happening at the same time and two such disparate animations happening at the same time.
Only if they farmed out one to somebody else. That's the only way it could work, is if they had two companies working on it at the same time.
I mean, it feels like a series of reconstructions on a DVD would be pretty dull viewing. I mean, I don't mind the reconstructions, and I guess I watched the Underwater Menace DVD within the last year. I wish I'd steered clear from because I thought it was a rip off, but true Yorkshire fashion, I found it a little bit cheaper now, and so I gave it a go. And actually, in the context of a four-part story where the first one and the last one are a reconstruction, you've got two live actions in the middle, there's kind of enough material to carry it through, and you don't get too fed up with those reconstructions. But with The Wheel in Space, with only two live-action episodes and four reconstructions, that would, I think, be pretty hard going. As you say, if by some miracle you know, an episode or two of that had come back, and then it was more in the lines of 4 live action to 2 reconstruction, then I could see that being, something that would be more of a goer.
It seems to me that the Americans, at least, are going to get the BritBox reconstructions as BBC America trying to cash in on the fact that they did reconstructions for Wheel in Space. Why they picked that first, it's beyond me. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's what they did.
Yep.
And it's probably something that they will sell in the US, and whether they sell it anywhere else is anybody's guess. Macroterra, yes. Wheel in Space, big no from me, I'm afraid.
Mm. Yeah, I think me too. If all it is 2 live action and 4 reconstructions, then forget it as far as I'm concerned. Okay, it's time, I think, for us to talk then about the Season 12 Blu-ray. And before we go into the content of the disc itself, I thought it'd be fun for us just to talk briefly about our experience of that season originally.
Yes.
So if I kick off, 1975, when that was broadcast in the UK, it was probably that was the series that I would fully say that I became a fan. So I mean, I had watched Doctor Who, you know, as long as I could remember. My dad watched it, and my grandfather as well. But so it was something that was always on a Saturday evening, and I enjoyed it. But I think that particular series, I mean, for a kickoff, my dad never really took to Tom Baker. He was more interested in John Pertwee. So he lost interest, and I gained interest. And also round about then was when I got the first Target book, the David Whittaker novelisation of the Daleks.
Yes.
And I think those two things, watching that series and then reading that book, were probably the formative experiences of me becoming a fan.
Yeah.
The series itself, I don't particularly remember robots so much. I mean, I remember from that period for the robot becoming huge. And the transformation.
Yes, I remember Robot quite well. Mainly because I hated it and still do, I must say. But I remember, I didn't see the series. I don't think I saw it when it was first broadcast here in Australia. I think I was moving states at the time. And I certainly recall seeing it 18 times on repeat. So I can't remember when I first saw it. Might have been 77. Might have been late 76. Right. But I certainly remember the whole season. We tended to get Loch Ness Monster, the Terror of the Zygons, as well, tacked on to the end.
As it was originally intended.
Yes. I think that I was a fan anyway, and I think that this sort of reinforced in my mind how good Doctor Who could be, and it certainly improved after that. And certainly, out of the story, the 5 stories there's 2 that are pretty much classics, in my opinion, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody would really disagree with me that Ark in Space and certainly Genesis of the Daleks are classics.
Yeah, yeah.
Robot, to me, isn't a great story. It sort of goes... Rewatching it, I thought, it's okay for 3 episodes. It's just the last episode just sort of doesn't do it any justice at all. The robot itself, I like the design of the robot's head. And it's sort of like after they round up the Trump youth and Professor Kettlewell with his comic relief hair gets zapped, it sort of just becomes sort of King Kong on a 2p budget, really, which is disappointing since Terrence Dix.
Yeah, I mean, it's got an interesting subplot with Sarah going to investigate the think tank, and yeah, I mean, that bit works well, quite well.
There's a lot more of Sarah being a journalist in this. There's not enough indeed. Of that. And I think that then the next story, Ark in Space, is when the Doctor's personality really starts to kick in.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's magic, and I think also it's where the partnership between the Doctor, Sarah, and Harry really comes out for the first time. I mean, they don't really interact all that much in Robot, do they? But in this, they're a real team.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can sort of see them probably building off the relationship they've got from the rehearsing together and so on. But you can see that they really click in that.
Yeah, and there's some decent acting too. Look, it's the one with the bubble wrap spray green. And the effects aren't that great. but it's such a good story that you just sort of ignore that. And the green does look
good. Mean, I never noticed the bubble wrap until somebody pointed it out to me, and then you can't really not notice it.
Yeah.
It's not so bad that it kills it for me.
No.
And the fantastic sets, of course, of the Ark.
Yes.
Which, really set it up.
Which sort of remind me a bit of Tomb of the Cybermen. Is that sort of like... Yeah. It gives the impression of like grandeur, which probably there wasn't.
Yeah.
But it's a really good story, and it's probably the one that starts to put the imprint of the Hinchcliffe era. You know, that sort of gothic horror type stuff that became more prevalent later. I think that there's a fair bit of that in there. You know, poor old Noah gets taken over, and and they're not really, the Wirren aren't really bad baddies, if you know what I mean. They're not evil or something. It's just,
No.
It's a really good story, and I can watch that again and again.
Yes. Yeah, it's definitely one of my favourite ones. Indomitable.
Yes. And then we go to Sontaran Experiment, which is all shot outside in video. And well, the good thing about it is that Sontarans are still Sontarans.
All right. I thought you were going to say the good thing about it is it's only two episodes long.
Well, yeah. But also Sontarans being Sontarans rather than comic relief certainly Moffat turned them into. The mask isn't anywhere near as convincing as it was in Time Warrior. But I think that was because of a comfort reason. I think that...
Oh, right.
Kevin Lindsay had it was in great discomfort in the Time Warrior, so it's a little bit flabbier looking. It's only two episodes. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean it gives useful employment to the four South African actors in London at the Times, which is nice.
Yes. it's all right. And then we get into the absolute classic, Genesis of the Daleks, which is a story that, the often told story from Terence Dick saying that Terry Nation offered to write them the same story yet again, and he basically said, well, you've given us this five times, Terry, how about something different? So he gave the Genesis thing, in which the Nazi element, which has always been there when you look at it, it was always implied, really comes to the fore. And also this one, and I know that in the first podcast, Tim and I, when I was talking about bad guest acting, mainly in the Pertwee era, this has two really good performances, Peter Miles as Nida and Michael Wisher as Davros, who are both extremely good. When I was watching it again, I was watching the nuance of Peter Miles' performance. Probably his best, but he's been in Doctor Who a lot, and he's always good, although slightly hysterical in the Silurians. But he's extremely good in this story, in my opinion. One of the best performances.
Yeah, thank you. That's what I needed to know.
Yes, very, very good.
Okay,
and it actually comes across okay on the HD, I thought, too, which some of the others don't.
Yeah.
But look, it's a great story, and I can watch that again and again. Watching it again, I thoroughly enjoyed it and watched it all, and it's great.
I think that's a good example, the Genesis one, of where you're not going to get any improvement in terms of the resolution, obviously.
No.
But the DVD version of that, particularly the missed scenes at the start, went very blocky just because the bitrate wasn't very good on the DVD. And so where the Blu-ray scores is, it's got much bigger bandwidth. The smoke works a lot better.
Yeah, and I think that Ark in Space and this is, and also Sontaran Experiment, really does give the impression that the Doctor Who is moving towards a more adult sort of audience. Like, it's moving well away from the old sit round at Saturday evening tea time thing with the family from the Hartnell era to this.
Yeah, and it belies this theory that Ian Marta was only there for the kind of physical scenes. I mean, I don't deny the fact that that's why they employed him, but he actually isn't particularly, as it turns out, the muscle. He's more kind of, it turns out to be kind of accident prone and rather polite. But he's just a fantastic character, Harry.
Yeah.
And a great trio with Sarah, the Doctor, and Harry.
Yes.
And it feels like they could have gone on for a couple of three series, and it would have been fine.
I agree with that.
There's always some sort of rationalisation after the event that he had to go, but it doesn't feel like that when you're watching Genesis.
Yeah. Growing up, when I was watching these stories, I always felt that they could have used Harry more. It was a really good team, and I think that the dynamic was great, and it certainly shows in those stories, I think. And Then we get to Revenge of the Cybermen, which to me, to me was the biggest disappointment of the series, because I'd been, you know, we'd waited, what was it, 6-7 years for a Cyberman story again, and then we got this. And look, it's okay. Leading up to the Cybermen turning up is great, but it's still like,
yeah,
it's kind of, that gold.
It kind of takes a dive as soon as they come on screen, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, but it also takes a dive when they end up on Voga and saw this, oh, gold, they're susceptible to gold all of a sudden. And, and it's just like, it's a plot device, but but it does, it's not really used against them either, really. It's more in Earthshock that it's used as a method to kill them, but it's just pretty disappointing, in my opinion. And I look so forward to seeing the Cybermen again, because I was a big fan. And yeah, even when I was a kid, I thought it was slightly disappointing. And I still do.
So this was my first experience of the Cybermen, because I was about 7 at the time. So, I mean, I wasn't around at their previous showing. I wasn't really aware at that age of it being a problem. And I do remember actually reading the novelisation and being quite impressed by that. But yeah, a combination of the kind of not very impressive makeup and costume for the Vogans, the Cybermen not being very Cybermenish and not really acting in a classic Cyberman way. On the other hand, you know, there's some good acting in it, particularly from the humans, you know, or the people playing humans.
Ronald Lee Hunt and William Marlowe.
Yeah, yeah.
William Marlowe's like, it's totally different to what he was in Mind of Evil. Like, he's not he's not a baddie, but there's also that restrained sort of, it's like he's about to go off and things like that. he sort of does that quite well. And you know what? That they completely waste Kevin Stoney in this story. Like, he's hidden under makeup, and they don't even use his voice. The same with Michael Wisher, too, a bit. But it's just, like, lost opportunity, in my opinion.
So what did you think of the new effects?
Well, I actually quite like the new effects in Revenge. I think that it it enhanced it a little bit. They didn't fix up the worst bit, unfortunately, which is the cyber mat when it's attacking people. It still looks pretty naff. But overall, I got more of an impression about what it should have looked like, I think. You know, all the things on the screen. When I first saw the leaked bits or the little bits from it, I thought, that looks a bit crap. But then when I actually saw it in the whole episode, I actually quite enjoyed it, I think. And I think it did improve the look of the story, the actual overall story, I'm afraid. But
I mean, I mean, it's nice to finally get rid of Rola Voga, which...
Well, yes. That was...
although, having said that, then the thing that they replaced it with was a little bit unbelievable, in that they appear to be heading straight towards some mountains, and then they somehow miraculously hover just over the surface for about a minute and a half, and then take off again.
I don't know.
I mean, it doesn't really matter either way, but
it is a bit better than Rola Voga, though. Yes, you're right.
It is better than Rola Voga. Yeah,
like anything would be. So, what did you think about the HD pictures?
For the episodes themselves, it really didn't make much difference except the higher bitrate. The making of documentary for Sontaran Experiment, where they reshot on Dartmoor and they shot that in HD, that looked fantastic.
Yeah.
So they definitely made good use there. On the other hand, then you had the Tom Baker interview with Matthew Sweet, which we'll talk about that later. But what worked against it there was that neither of them really needed to be in HD.
No,
You know, Tom Baker is an old man now, but you've got them kind of awkwardly bunged on the screen. Tom Baker somehow got his trousers hitched halfway up his legs, so you can see his fantastic white socks and his not particularly attractive trainers that he's wearing.
Yes,
and Matthew Sweet kind of is uncomfortable. I don't know when they sort of go into a close up, it kind of works better. But that kind of mid shot that they do an awful lot of, they're both sitting so awkwardly, and the HD's kind of working against it.
Yeah, and the overall picture quality is, in some of them, because it comes from video, it looks very soft in places. Soft and unfocused, and it doesn't enhance it. You know, the last episode of Robot looks even worse in HD. It could do with being murkier, I think, so it doesn't look so bad. It also shows up some of the deficiencies in ARC as well. I didn't notice any problem at all with Genesis, to be honest, apart from the soft It looks a little bit like soft focus at times. It's just because the bit rate's too high for the quality of the pictures, I think.
I mean, I'm trying to work out actually also in both Ark and Revenge, in the corridors around there, you can sort of see that there's kind of light bulbs against a black background and there's various bits of gantry. And I'm trying to work out, is that supposed to be space, in which case you can see too much of it, or is that supposed to be another darker area behind it, in which case it's okay, but why are there lights there? It feels like it's neither one thing nor another, really.
Yeah, the sound's really good, though. I must say, the sound comes across really well.
Yeah. So perhaps what you do have is a fantastic package. I mean, you know, what they're able to do, I suppose, is bring together a huge amount of material onto each of those discs.
Yes.
So in addition to the stories, then there's all the extras that they already had, plus a bunch of other ones. So,
yeah.
If the picture quality is not that much better, then at least it's the definitive set with, you know, everything you could possibly want.
Yeah. I love the packaging. It's really lavish. It looks expensive, like this is the box and everything. I've got the English version, and I believe that the Australian version is exactly the same packaging.
Okay.
I'm not sure whether it's like a box or not, but BBC Worldwide told me it was exactly the same.
Uh-huh.
I like the menu things as well.
Yes, oh, that was splendid, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's a big step up from the DVD stuff.
Yes.
And I really enjoyed that. I also enjoyed the little Tom Baker voiceover things about... Was it season 12 box set, disc 4? I quite like that. And I think that the overall look and feel of the whole package is fantastic. And I think that they've done an excellent job there.
Yes, I thought, the phrase that came to my mind was unnecessarily lovely. I mean, it there's almost too much love gone into it for what it really is. But I mean, it is fantastic.
Lavish and is the word I like.
I was just reveling, I guess, in how lovely it all was and some of the features. And in fact, the first thing that I watched, and perhaps the first thing that we'll talk about in a bit more detail, was the Tom Baker and Matthew Sweet interview.
Yes.
So I mean, we've talked about the framing of that, but in the content of it, what do you think about the interview?
Well, you learn a lot, apart from Matthew Sweet's inability to open a wine bottle. I think he's better playing guitar.
Yeah.
He's very enthusiastic, too. At the start of it, it's almost like manic. It's like, oh, I've got Tom Baker, blah, 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 blah. And you do learn things, most of which, you know, certainly the early stuff, like I knew about Tom Baker...
Yeah.
Building site and stuff like that, but you saw photos of him when he went back and stuff like that. I thought that was I quite liked that because I hadn't seen that, and you've only heard it or read about it rather than actually hear him talk about it and stuff like that, and you get sort of an impression about his earlier career and stuff, and you know, when he wrote the letter and was it Sean Sutton's wife and stuff like that. Oh, Tom Baker would be good and stuff like that. He didn't mention about, was it the Sinbad film that Barry Letts and Terence Dix went to see, which he's rather good in, by the way.
But I think there is something else on the disc where Barry Letts goes through that story.
Yes.
So you don't miss out on it.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, it's the robot feature, isn't
it?
That's where it is.
Yeah. It was a really good interview, and I think that it's always nice to hear Tom Baker talk.
Yeah.
He's very interesting. He's got that voice. He's got that fantastic voice. You wouldn't know he's from Liverpool, would you?
No. Well, you know, he had it well and truly knocked out of him in the vocal training, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
So I thought it was hugely entertaining.
Yes,
and,
I thought so too.
I do love listening to Tom Baker and his wild stories. I mean, you know, you discount about 75% of the stuff that he says because, you know, he's looking for effect. But I mean, at the same time, he always tells a fantastic story.
Yeah.
And he still seems remarkably lucid, and he was well engaged in the interview.
Yes.
I mean, I suppose on the other hand, I'd say there were some slightly strange elements too, in that Matthew Sweet was a little bit knowing, I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously he knew what he knew his subject well, and he was well researched, but you know, some of the questions that he asked were a little bit too knowing of what the answer would be, maybe it's nitpicking. There was a lot made of the fact that they'd managed to engage Tom Baker. Paul Vanessis was saying this, by asking him some unusual questions. And I thought that some of them were perhaps a little bit deliberately offbeat and unnecessarily so.
Yeah.
But, you know, on the whole, really good and enjoyed that.
We've got to flesh out an hour too.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, and I think it's you can contrast that with Tom Baker in that Behind the Sofa feature.
Yeah.
Because I watched two of them, I must say. I watched the one for Genesis and the one for Revenge. And particularly in Revenge, he hardly says anything.
No, well, he hardly says anything in any of them.
Yeah.
And you've I mean, if you've seen two of them, you've seen five of them, really. In fact, you know, you could see one of them and you'd know everything that was going to come.
I don't know what you thought about that. It's a bit unnecessary as far as a feature goes. But
so for me, what you get out of it is you get Philip Hinchcliffe comes out with the odd little gem.
And he talks a lot. Philip sort of carries the first one because Sadie Miller doesn't really say a lot at all. And no, Tom,
well, you wouldn't expect her to.
Tom sort of murmurs a bit about actors a lot. And in the Genesis one, I remember him talking about that he wanted to play a Nazi on a lower low and stuff like that.
Mm.
When they're talking about Guy Siner. He doesn't say a lot at all. And it's, which is not what you'd expect. And the other one with the three companions, Louise Jameson, Janet Fielding and Sarah Sutton. Like,
I mean, you get some interest from Louise Jameson.
Yeah.
And then the other two, it's very thin. I mean, if it was 1 hour long feature, say, for all five stories in the season.
Yes.
And, you know, it was the best of the stuff they'd done. I think it would work much better.
Yes.
I think the problem is there's too many clips and not enough content and it's too spread out and each one of them's a bit thin.
Yeah.
So I bet if you did a compilation edit of it, you'd think it was pretty good, but it isn't tight enough.
It's one of those things you think, what's the point of this? And, you know, look, I thought that Janet Fielding was a bit of a hoot, really. Through the whole thing.
I mean, who doesn't love Janet Fielding? Yeah. But she just was a bit a fish out of water.
But she's got that very Australian thing where she's, which is what my daughters do. They have a blanket, and she's covered in the blanket watching it. That really amused me no end. But some of her sort of anecdotes, and obviously a lot of it they don't really know, but they say things, and it's like for some of them it was the first time they'd seen it, and certainly they got a bit more serious during bits of Genesis where they're going, well, that's a bit, that's a bit full on. The bits where Sarah's climbing the gantry and I thought that was interesting. Their reactions were less jokey for that. And it's like, oh, that's a bit, that's a bit full on. And, you know, and Tom saying during that, this is rather good, isn't it?
Mm.
Which it is, Tom.
I'm rather presuming that they only get to see the clips that are in the package because
I would assume so.
They couldn't possibly sit them down for 10 hours or however long it would have been to watch all of it.
No.
So there are some slightly odd leaps in that footage which must have made it quite hard for them to follow what was going on.
Mm. But you know, overall, what's your impression of the box set? Is it a thumbs up or a thumbs down, I guess?
Yeah, I would say thumbs up. I've got a few more things I wanted to talk about from the set that I've seen. So, and I know you've seen this one as well. The rehearsal read through.
Oh yes.
Section from Robot.
When I saw that, it's like, oh God, all they did was they were all smoking. It's like amazing they could actually read anything with all that smoke haze. Mm. That's the thing. It's like the 70s thing. It's like an episode of UFO.
I found it astonishing. I mean, I think if you'd had the audio for it, I think it's the sort of thing you'd have watched 5 minutes of and switched off because, you know, it was kind of a curio. But somehow, because there wasn't the audio and then they put this kind of strange music alongside it, it kind of transformed it almost into something other. I mean, I found it weirdly compelling.
Yeah, so did I, actually,
It was almost there, and yet it was a million miles away. It was almost like watching an alien world. And it was like watching the parallel universe versions of the characters that we know. So you've got Nick Courtney, not the Brigadier, Nick Courtney's He's got his scarf. He's looking quite rakish and, yes. you know, a bit actory and the opposite of the Brigadier.
Yeah.
You've got Tom Baker, who starts off quite, you know, laughing a lot and joking and then actually gets more serious the longer it goes on and quite quiet and attentive and very respectful of everybody and the opposite of the monster that everyone talks about from later on.
Yeah.
You know, lots of smiles, although, of course, there's cameras there that might have had something. There's Chris Barry doing his thing and looking sort of calmly authoritative, hard to say, you know, without the sound, but it looks like he's in control. Patricia Maynard is an absolute champion smoker. I mean, she must have got through most of her packet.
Yeah.
Michael Kilgariff was interesting because, I mean, my only experience of Michael Kilgariff was as a sort of fairly beardy, rotund figure from conventions in the sort of 80s and then maybe DVD features in the 90s. You know, a big guy, but big in every dimension. And here you've got this very dapper figure in the three-piece suit and, you know, all his own hair and it looks quite different.
Well, he's so a lot younger then, and certainly he sort of bulked out a bit by the time of Attack of the Cybermen.
He was a bit younger. I mean, it was only, you know, a dozen years. It wasn't maybe less than that, maybe more like 10 years. And then you've got, I thought Robert Holmes and Terrence Dix, they look absolutely chummy matey. They both got pipes. They were chatting away quite merrily. They seem to be having a high old time. Yeah. So I that was something that I thought was good. I've briefly mentioned the making of documentary for the Sontaran experiment. I thought, funnily enough, the making of that was almost as long as the story itself, but it was a well-made feature. It had lots of interesting content of it, and I enjoyed watching that one. The Revenge of the Cybermen one, which they'd remade, less so. I didn't think there was so much to tell there, and they were trying to cut in, I think, some content from a previous one.
Yeah.
Barry Letts. They managed to sort of bring back Barry Letts from the dead in a way by bringing in some of these features, and it was nice to see him, and you always get an interesting story out of Barry, so that was good. The movie version of Genesis, unrestored, don't really understand what that's doing there. I mean, they did restore it for the cinema versions. It seemed a bit odd I guess probably it was too late that they'd restored it, and so they just bunged. They tried to make a virtue of, oh, look, you know, you can see what it looks like unrestored, but it just felt like that was a bit lame. So the only other thing really was the Tom Baker years VHS thing, which I watched the first half of. I'd never got the VHS release. It was sort of early to mid-90s, and I wasn't buying videos at that point. And I think I'd have just thought it was pointless anyway.
Well,
and actually, it is pointless. Because basically, it's Tom Baker saying, I don't remember that, about 15 times, really. I mean, the clips are interminable.
Yeah.
And then Tom Baker comes up and he says, oh, yes, very good. I don't remember being in that one. You know, I mean, he's trying very hard and he's in good form and he looks quite engaged and quite happy. But unfortunately, nobody's prepared him for it.
Yeah.
So he just sits down there and it's all a bit of a mess. So I guess to some extent, what that does show is how important it is to have someone like Matthew Sweet or Nick Briggs, who did a similar thing on audio for Big Finish, to bring the right stuff out of him. So So coming back to your question, what did I think of the thing as a whole? Yeah, really happy to have it. I don't know whether I would be as excited about one of these for every series of Doctor Who. I mean, this is a series from my youth, at a formative time. It's a TARDIS team that I really like. It's got an interest, you know, it's got a producer in Philip Hinchcliffe who is engaged and interested and you know, keen to pass on his knowledge. So maybe more of Hinchcliffe I'd be interested in, but you know, you've got most of the other producers and aren't with us anymore, so it's hard to know what you could replace that with.
Yeah, I think that for me, yes, I'm glad I bought it. Like you, I'm not sure that I'd go for every single series. I think series 13 would be good because all the stories are great.
Indeed.
And seeing stuff like that, like series 19 is the rumoured next one, which I'm less keen on, I must confess.
Mm-hmm.
But I may end up buying it. Look, it's quite expensive here. I can understand why people may be reluctant, but it's certainly worth it from my perspective. And it takes less room on the shelf, which is a good thing for me since I've got so much stuff everywhere. Yeah, look, I'm glad I bought it. I'm glad I looked at it. There's a lot of new stuff on there that engaged me. I think it's really good. Pity they didn't have the Daleks extra from the Genesis DVD, but obviously that's going to turn up somewhere else. But I think that, look, overall I'd say yes, and if you can get it cheap enough, then I'd definitely do it.
Okay, so I think then to finish off, I was going to pick out some questions that Huey had posted on our forum. So Tim, a month or so back, mentioned we were going to look at the Blu-ray in this episode, and there was a little bit of byplay. But Huey asked some questions, and it would be interesting for us to answer some of them. So, I mean, and we may have covered some of this ground already, but we'll pick out the ones that are interesting. So, so first question that Huey asks is the use of CG to replace the original effects enough to modernize classic Who to make it more marketable to a newer clientele? So do you think this is enough to make it appeal to the modern audience, the new series crowd?
Possibly. It depends on whether they're engaged enough. My daughters don't really take much notice of whether it's CGI or not. But they seem to think that it's okay. So who knows?
Yeah, I think my view is that if you're a fan of the series, of the new series, then you might be prepared to sit down and watch it. I can't see very many people casually picking this up who are viewers only of modern telly and being that interested in it. I think you've either got to be someone who was around at the time or someone who is a fan and is prepared to sit through it, because I don't think it makes that much of a difference.
No,
having the CG effects. Okay, so the next question is starting at season 12 a good choice?
I think it's as good a choice as any, I think. It's certainly, for a lot of people, certainly people my age and your age, Richard, it's the era of when people watch Doctor Who in their droves, certainly here and in the UK, and it's the beginning of the popularity of the programme.
Okay, well, so let's pick one more then.
Yeah.
Are there lessons that the new series could learn from season 12? And what, if so?
Decent stories would be. Some decent, engaging stories that are actually about something and actually reflect on certain, arc in spaces about possession and stuff like that. So, Doctor Who's always been about something allegorical type thing. So, of course, they could learn how to tell a decent story and how to tell a decent story within a reasonable time frame as well, I think. And also about the four of them. So it'd be interesting to see how that works in the context of how three of them worked in Series 12. Whether they got it right in Series 12, whereby it worked, everybody got to do their thing and they came across individually. Whereas it's certainly in other times it seemed a bit overcrowded, and certainly later with Series 19 it seems very overcrowded. But then you had Adric, so it'll be interesting to see how that dynamic works in the new series. So it could be interesting. I'm not sure what you think about that, Richard.
So I think the things that come out particularly for Season 12 for me are that team of three being really good and working really well together. So let's hope that that's something that they've got in line for the new series 11. I guess more towards the end of this series, and probably more in season 13, the Holmes Hinchcliffe thing was really working well. You've got this kind of slightly strange juxtaposition in this series of the Barry Letts against Philip Hinchcliffe vision. So it starts off very strongly Barry, and it's still quite a lot of Barry all the way through, but he's sort of tailing off, I guess, towards the end. Whereas I guess Zygons onwards in season 13 it's much more Hinchcliffe. But of course there's a lot of Holmes in it. He wrote in the end the Ark in Space, he rewrote most of Revenge. And I dare say he probably had to write a fair chunk of Genesis as well. So, there's a lot of him in there.
And I think that, it comes down to your script editor, which is now the showrunner. Whether that vision comes through very well. Like, I know that Stephen Moffat, was not last season, the season before, seemed to rewrite an awful lot because he got co-credits on a lot of stories. Hopefully they'll reflect on how to do that properly, so it just doesn't look like a dog's breakfast.
Okay, well, I think we're done then with our season 12 review and with that, the podcast.
Yes. So we should say
bye. Bye. We'll be back at some point in the future.
It's just the body sort of looks like a robotic Teletubby. And it's so big and heavy, obviously, that Michael Kilgariff, he sort of staggers around like a chav on a good Friday night out, really. And it's really obviously uncomfortable for him. And there's a lot of staggering around. And it looks like he's about, you know, if he was a chav, he'd be looking for some willy bin to throw up in. It'd be nice to see the Sontarans come back and actually have a decent story. Because they haven't had one since Doctor Who's been back.
I'm trying to think when the last good Sontaran story was. It was probably Time Warrior.